This is a dramatic episode. This is a dramatic beginning. I thought I'd just throw some stupid music in there. It is. It's dramatic. It's episode 104, but it's more than episode 104, everybody. Welcome. It is I, Morgan Wright, here with literally with my partner in crime, Mr. 00 Murph.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. And this is a special episode.
This it is 2 years. Yeah. Dos años.
You guys have supported us for 2 years now. What is wrong with you people?
Get your head checked.
Oh, man, this is, I don't know that either one of us ever thought we'd be here 2 years later with Game of Crimes.
Nope, but guess what? We are.
So you can tell Morgan has way too much time on his hands.
Just playing around with a couple of the sound effects. Thank you very much. Yes.
Oh, geez. One of these days, I'm going to get a mute button so I can mute him.
Well, you can, Murph. Just take the headphones off and walk away. But
yeah, but I don't want anybody else to hear you either.
It's like a car wreck. You can't turn your head away. Well, hey, everybody, welcome back. This is a momentous. This is 2 years. 2 years of us doing this, 104 episodes. In addition to, we took the month of December off last year, but we replayed 4 of our Patreon episodes. So technically, mm-hmm. You know, we've got like 108 episodes out right now, but 2 years. Yeah, we started this thing of ours 2 years ago with the first episode, which happened to be, and we did a recap, you know, after our first year, but the first episode came out June 21st was the trailer, and June 28th was the very first episode of Game of Crimes with you and JP.
It was. The people we have had on here for the last 2 years has just been phenomenal. Not only good guys, not only heroes, but some former bad guys who've given us all a great look into the criminal side of things, not the law enforcement side of things. It's people call us and they're like, how do you get these guests? Well, some we know people who know people. Some
got a guy. We call Michael Franzese. He's got a guy too. Dominic Polifrone. They all got guys.
Oh, it's
Joe
just,
Pistone.
It's unbelievable. And it's as you know, it's all about portraying law enforcement in the most positive light. We want our law enforcement guests on here. And we want you to hear about the sacrifices they make, the bravery that they show, the dedication to service and to duty and the honor, as well as the sacrifice of their families that they make so that their loved ones can go out and do their job. I mean, we even had Connie on here. Episode 30, my wife came on to bust my chops for about 2 hours.
And you know what? We had a hard time getting her on. And then once we got her on the podcast, it took a SWAT team to get her off. She said, no, wait a minute. There's something else I wanted to cover. So we had to bring her back.
So that's, I tell you, it's just true heroes. I'm in awe of some of the people. And it's not stopping. It's not slowing down. The list, I'm looking at the list now. There's probably 70 names on our potential interview list right now of more heroes that we've either know or we've heard about that we want to bring on the show. So you can just continue to hear what
goes. And there's some you haven't heard about and you don't get to hear about them unless you're on Patreon, which I'm going to throw a shameless plug for patreon.com/gameofcrimes. We talk about a couple big names coming up that we are currently scheduling, but you're only going to find out if you're on that side. But hey, well, let's kick this off real quick though, too. Just let me get some of the housekeeping out of the way, and then let's talk about what's coming up. So hey, head on over to Apple, Spotify, hit those 5 stars. Let us know what you think about the show. We appreciate your comments, your feedback. It helps us really improve, and it helps us reach out to even more people. Head on over to our website, gameofcrimespodcast.com. Our book list is growing and growing by the day. I mean, we've got a bunch of books on there, and with our new guests coming out, we just had Mundo on, so we had his book about being a member of the Mexican Mafia from Altar Boy to Hitman. So you got to go check that out. Follow us on that thing they call social media at Game of Crimes on Twitter, Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram. And also, if you are so worthy and you think yourself worthy and you want admittance to the inner sanctum, head on over to Game of Crimes Fans and type that into Facebook. Sandy Salvato, our favorite mafia queen, reigns with a velvet glove over us mere mortals. And if you are, if you're even remotely worthy, we might let you in to see what goes on the inside.
That velvet glove is a boxing glove, so don't take her off.
Whack! All right. And then you got to be, though, it's patreon.com/gameofcrimes. We just did, right as before Murph and I are recording this, we recorded our June 2023 episode, season 2 review of Narcos, as only can be done by one of the people who was there.
Who was that?
See, Murph forgets already. I had to remind him of all the key elements. And you know what he does, too? He gives away the ending every single time. So, spoiler alert, Pablo dies in the end. I just give it away right now. Okay.
There you go.
Episode 10, Pablo dies. All right. There you go. But still tune in and find out what we had to say. But we got 911, what's your emergency coming up? We've got Case of the Month, which we just did on Daniel Penny and Jordan Neely about what happened up in New York. We gave our thoughts on what we thought about the case. But we got lots of good stuff. So you got to go hit it up. Patreon.com/GameOfCrimes. Tell one, tell all, tell your friends. Just join in with the hilarity and the fun.
You know, one of the things we have on there is the Q&A. So every month, our listeners on Patreon will send us questions. We have not turned down a single question yet on Patreon. So you've got some personal questions you want to ask us? Come on Patreon, send us your questions, and we'll give you some answers. We're not going to tell you they're right answers, but they will be the answers.
Yeah, some of them, Alex Hall, we've had to split up and answer over multiple episodes. But we answer all the questions, and that's a good point, too. So, but, you know, Murph, this is a show about crime. We talk about bad people doing bad things and bad people doing bad things to good people. We take the story seriously, but...
we never take ourselves serious. This is going to be a lot of fun.
And what makes it fun, Murph? What makes it fun? Huh, huh, huh? What's the one section we do that's really lots of fun?
I think it's right time now for...
Small Town Police Blotter. Hey, this is the 2 year, and I'm going to bring back something we used to do. But hey, but let's talk about this one, though, Murph. You ever heard of a party pooper?
Oh, yeah.
I got a real party pooper here for you.
All right.
It's a substitute teacher, guess what, in Florida, was arrested at an outdoor birthday picnic party. Because Heather Carpenter, 42, was unhappy with the way the principal at Philippi Shores Elementary School in Sarasota handled a complaint she filed. She didn't like the way he did it. So, according to a witness, I saw a lady wearing a mask with rubber gloves on. She had a cup of something. She was pouring it out on the tables and then wiping it in. She went table to table. The police showed up, and guess what they identified it as?
Oh, Lord, it's Florida. I don't know.
Poop. That's why she's a party pooper. She smeared human feces all over the tables during a child's birthday party.
What was her motivation?
Again, well, she was unhappy with the way the principal, this was the principal's daughter who was having the birthday party. So she went and attacked the principal's birthday party for his daughter with, she was a true party pooper.
What a moron. So is she looking for a job now?
Yeah, she no longer works for the Philippi Shores Elementary School. But here, pro tip, if you want to hire her, don't piss her off.
Hey, how would you like to be a potential employer and you're checking out her references and you call that principal? What do you think about her? I think she's full of shit.
Yeah, man. It was a crappy experience.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Well, hey, Steve, this one just happened.
Okay.
Again, another Florida man.
Yay, Florida.
June 21st. Police arrested this man. Suspected of stealing an assortment of sexual aids from a Target store, including what fell out of his pants was a small pink vibrator. Now, responding to a larceny call Monday afternoon, cops confronted David Romero, 46, as he sat in his Dodge Ram near the Target in Palm Coast, a city about 25 miles north of Daytona Beach.
Okay.
While handcuffed and being placed in the back of the cruiser, a small pink vibrator fell out of his pants. Is that a vibrator? Are you happy to see me, son? It was revealed to have been stolen from Target. A subsequent search, Steve, of his truck turned up an assortment of other stolen goods, including Trojan and Skin condoms, Hello Cake lubricant, and Promescient, something like that, called a climax control spray. A Target loss prevention officer told cops that Romero hid the items in a piece of shapewear that he did not scan at the self-checkout line. Now, here's the payoff, Steve. When asked about the merchandise found in his truck, Romero claimed that the items had been in his vehicle for days. Police said Romero added that he was going to use those items today on his wife because he was working all day yesterday and could not celebrate Father's Day with her.
Oh, poor guy. So the pink vibrator fell out of his shorts. What else fell out?
Oh, my God.
Nothing?
Well, Hello Cake lubricant. Hello. Nothing says hello like Frosty the Snowman. You know, here we go.
Oh, jeez. Was that Walmart?
No, Target.
Target. Oh, Target. Wow.
I didn't know they carried those things at Target, but...
I didn't either.
Wow. Okay. I haven't shopped at Target in a long time.
Well, it is Florida.
It is Florida. So, Steve, I'm going to bring back for a two-year anniversary. We used to do this called What Year Was It?
Okay.
But I'm not going to tell you. I'm going to give you the year. I'm going to ask you, instead of what year was it, where was it?
Okay.
All right.
Florida.
Nope. Nope. This happened Friday, the 19th of March, 1858, before the mayor and other magistrates. Minor offenses. 8 persons were fined for drunkenness. James Ferguson was fined for not having his name on his dray. Dray is a cart to pull things, so it was his cart with his goods. Mary Murphy, for being without visible means of support and for previous misconduct, was sent to jail for 1 month. Cyrus Lord was charged with having refused to satisfy a judgment for wages at Beechworth, was remanded to that place. Julia Kennedy, for using disgusting language in the streets, was sent to jail for 6 months. Whoa, being an old offender. Michael Slater and John Western, for fighting in the streets, were fined. And 5 sailors charged with having deserted their ships were handing back over to their respective captains. Now, the last one, though, damaging property. 2 women named Doherty and Welsh were charged with breaking the window of a house belonging to a man named Scholar. Now, the prosecutor gave his evidence, which I believe you prosecute your own case, as if no possible motive could have induced them to commit the act, whereas, from the statement of one of the defendants, the prosecutor had struck her on the breast with a piece of wood. The mayor dismissed the case. So, this all happened March 19th, 1858. Steve, not what year was it, but where was it?
Do you want a state or a city?
You give me anything you want to give me.
I'm going to guess Boston, Massachusetts.
No.
Philadelphia.
No.
Charleston, South Carolina.
Not even in the United States.
Oh, this didn't happen in the United States?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about the U.S. Because
Where was it? Your first clue was where was it?
I know, but I was giving you where. I just didn't realize it wasn't in the U.S. That sounds like a British thing.
Nope.
Or Ireland, because I thought I heard some Irish names in there.
Maybe, but no. Guess where this happened?
Where?
March 20th, 1858, Melbourne, Victoria.
Wow. I didn't expect that in Australia.
Well, and what I did tell you was what they were fined 10 shillings. And so if I'd thrown that in there, it would have kind of given you that, but I played you.
Well, and if I'd heard shillings, I'd have probably still said London or England.
Yeah, UK or something like that. Yeah. Okay. But anyway, that comes to us from the police court that happened on March 19th, 1858, was reported in The Age. It's called The Age, reported on March 20th, 1858, in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, down under.
There you go.
There you
go. I mean, you come on Game of Crimes, and it's just educational.
It's educational. We just teach you shit. Yeah, like party poopers.
You know. Well, and if you come to Patreon, we even have a section we didn't tell you about. It's called "You Can't Make This Shit Up." You never know what you're going to learn.
You can't make it up. In fact, it's stranger than fiction. So, anyway, there you go. That is it. That is it for us. And so now that brings us into our case in chief, as they say in the courts, our episode in chief. This is the icing on the cake, so to speak. This is 2 years worth. And as we did last year, we were down at the Southern California Gang Conference, and we ran into people again this year, some of them everyone who's been on our podcast, obviously. And so we decided we grabbed 3 people. In addition to 2 other interviews we did, you guys, we just did Ramon Mundo Mendoza. Got a lot of great comments about that. We've got another bad guy coming out, William Rodriguez Badia, the son of the father of the Cali, his father was the creator of the Cali cartel. That's going to be coming out. We got a great one coming out too. I won't give you his name yet because we got to finish it up today. But what we did while we were down in San Diego, we caught up with John Mattingly, Bob Mazur, and Joe Pistone. And what was interesting is had the chance to hear John Mattingly talk about the case of Breonna Taylor, what really happened. And I'll tell you what, a lot of people got their eyes open, even cops. All they know is what they hear in the news too. They don't hear the real story. Well, I thought it was interesting because John came down and laid it out for everybody.
I was tickled to death to meet him in person. He's now, although we were virtual friends now. We're personal friends. Just got to hang out with him there, and then he's got his book out. We had our book out. You were out there helping me out. I'm kind of in awe of the guy because of what he's been through, the way he handled himself, and his attitude towards things now. And you'll hear it in this update that you're getting ready to hear on today's episode. He's still, I don't know that he'll tell you this, but he and his family still have to live in undisclosed locations because the threats continue. It's horrific what he's going through, but he has such a good attitude about it. So just an honor to meet you in person, John. Glad, we had the opportunity and looking forward to seeing you at some future events.
Yeah, I was getting him hooked up with a buddy of mine on SiriusXM, get him a radio interview done, get some information out. And it's important because we had cops coming back out, and I told some of the cops, I said, make sure you pay attention, because a lot of people didn't know this. And I even told John, I gave him a piece of constructive criticism. I said, dude, you glossed over it, you put the picture up there, but you know how many people know his son-in-law is black?
Yeah, very few. Unless our listeners do, because we covered that.
Yeah, but he says, well, it was in the pictures. I said, quite frankly, people gloss through that. They don't get that. Mm-hmm. You got to tell them, because to me, that's a paradigm shifter. And you'll hear in his episode, he talks about how he tried to give a presentation one time, and they basically ran him out of there. And it's like, that's disgusting.
It is. It is. And still living under threats after all this time. And not just him, his family. That's the thing that really ticks me off is you want to come after me because I was law enforcement. Okay. I figured that to a degree is part of my job. But when you come after our families, let me tell you what, that's a whole different level that's going to get a whole different response.
That is far different. And you don't get to do that. I'm sorry, folks, that there is nothing that says you get to do that. Right. So we caught up with John, which is really good. Like I said, his book, he sold a lot of books.
Mm-hmm. I think he sold them all.
Yeah, sold them all, right? 12 Seconds in the Dark. So, and the real story, but it was interesting because then we talked with some of the folks that came out, and it's like, man, had no idea. Mm-hmm. Even the cops had their paradigm changed. Story, the narrative was shot down, so to speak, because once you hear the truth and once you hear about what was going on, it changes. So I thought that was really good with John. So you guys are going to enjoy that. And then from John, we had caught up with our friend Joe Piston.
Mm-hmm.
And the dude is still, actually what was good, Murph, too, is you got him hooked up with UTA, because yeah. I didn't realize this. All of the stuff he's done is always fine to be friends. He's never been officially represented with all of these things. And he's done how many documentaries and gets calls all the time?
Oh, and he's been brought in as consultant on different law enforcement TV shows and movies and things like that. He's extremely active, plus the speaking circuit, plus his books. And still maintains a friendship with Johnny Depp, who portrayed him and Donnie Brasco. I think that's cool. I think that's very cool.
The day you almost caught Captain Jack Sparrow.
That's right.
I just thought.
And the cool thing about Joe is when we get to see him at this conference, I've known him now for 4 or 5 years, and he texts me afterwards, and just he's such an encouraging individual. I mean, people come up and ask us for war stories about Narcos and Escobar and all that kind of stuff. Man, when I want to hear war stories, Joe's Pistone's the guy I go to, because I'm in awe just sitting there listening to the stories he's telling. But he always has his wife and one of his children with him, his daughter. And just these people are just some of the nicest people you will ever meet in your life.
It was really great meeting the wife, meeting the daughter. They sat up there. They were his fans. They watched him. They listened to some of the sessions that were going on. And it was fun to talk to Joe. And this is my first chance to meet Joe in person, because we were supposed to meet last year, and he ended up, I think, getting sick, fell ill, couldn't come out there. And so it was funny, because we go to sit down, and even him to this day, it's like he's concerned about, he doesn't really want his image out there, doesn't want, not that, maybe after this point, maybe a lot of people have forgot, but then I think about Griselda Blanco, and it's like, cartels, they don't forget.
Traffickers don't forget.
And bad guys don't either, but hopefully that's passed. But so it was good to catch up with Joe. So each of these things are about 30 minutes long. We didn't want to overdo it. Mm-hmm. So we had that. So we talked with Joe. Great catching up with him and finding out a lot of the stuff he's got in the works. And then an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
And I say this one's interesting because we caught up with Bob Mazur. We had him on. We talked about the infiltrator.
Mm-hmm.
And he told us about something that was coming out, which you've got that book right in front of you there, Murph. Tell people what the book is.
I do. So Bob Mazur has a new book called The Betrayal, The True Story of My Brush with Death in the World of Narcos and Launderers. And if you remember from episode 44, when we did his first interview, Bob infiltrated the money laundering side of the Medellin cartel back in the day. Well, his new book is about what happened after the Medellin cartel. And here's the cool thing. You know, his first book was made into a movie called The Infiltrator that starred Bryan Cranston, who plays Mazur. And he's maintained his relationship with Bryan Cranston. And so now Bryan is going to produce the new movie on this new book, The Betrayal. I just think, you know, it's amazing the people that you get to meet in retirement because of things that you were involved with in the past and people that you know. I mean, at the conference, we got to meet John Bernthal, the actor from The Punisher, who's agreed to come on our show here on Game of Crimes later on this year. But here you got Bob Mazur, who has maintained this friendship with Bryan Cranston to the point that, you know, Bryan wants to produce a movie about Bob's next adventure. So,
and the interesting thing about Bob's next adventure, it deals with the betrayal and the guy who betrayed him.
Oh,
spoke at the conference. I don't even want to give this guy airtime.
No, not his name.
But they have never talked. In fact, while we were there, they kept them in separate rooms because Bob didn't want to deal with this guy. Now they did end up being on stage together.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody wanted to hang around this guy. He was in there all by himself. Nobody sat with him. I'm sorry, man. It's one thing. If you make a mistake or you do something, you pay your time. But this guy, you know, I hate to say it, Murph, but I treated this guy worse than I treated Mundo, you know, or
right.
Because I'm sorry, this guy, he did it to one of our own. He threw this, he dimed him out while he was in Colombia telling the traffickers, this guy's DEA, you can't trust him.
Now, only by the grace of God is Bob Mazur still with us today because of what this former police officer did to him. You know, I went back in the green room, and typically there's always people back in the green room at this conference, and it's a large room, and there's drinks in there, water and coffee, and there's some snacks, and that's where we have lunch, and you can leave your stuff in there and not have to worry about disappearing, things like that. And I went back, I think I went back to get some ice cream. Oh, it was donut day, you know, so I went back to get a donut.
It was National Donut Day. That's right. Yeah.
And the only, you know, normally that room would have been full of law enforcement professionals back there because there's donuts.
Donuts.
And the only person back there besides that former police officer was the lady in charge of the green room. Nobody was back there. I got my donut and my coffee and I left. I came back out front. I was just, you know.
That's what we did.
Yep. He stepped across that thin blue line and went to the dark side. And that's the way we, you know, I mean, I'd love to say things to him. I wasn't going to embarrass him like that or myself. But absolutely want nothing to do with him.
And he didn't even take response. He, you know, was it you I was talking? No, it was Perry. You remember Perry?
Mm-hmm.
I predicted. It's the same routine. He gets to the point. It's like, and then, you know, I was looking at my gun. I said, okay, here it comes. I thought about killing myself thing. He wanted to generate sympathy.
Yeah.
And he did. True to form, he went right down that thing. Oh, I thought about killing myself. No, you selfish bastard. You didn't. You know why? Because you wanted the money. You wanted the power.
Yeah.
And then. But the other thing did is when they actually got out on stage, he never took responsibility for it. He would not admit to the things. And Bob had the communications. They had some stuff intercepted. Mm-hmm. He would not admit still to this day of doing that.
Yeah. So anyway, Bob's the hero here. And you're going to hear about all his new activities.
Yep.
Just enough about that piece of crap, man.
Yeah, let's get into it because we went a little bit longer intentionally because we wanted to set up, catch you guys up. It is our 2-year episode. So apologies for going long on the front end. We'll shorten it up on the back end. Mm-hmm. But Murph, I think it's time to hear the updates from John Mattingly, Joe Pistone, and Bob Mazur. But there's only one way we're going to get to them, and that's by me asking you, are you ready to play the biggest, baddest, most dangerous game of all, the Southern California Gang Conference 2-year anniversary episode, Game of Crimes?
Brother, everybody, get in, sit down, shut up, and hold on. You're just going to hear stories that you haven't heard before, and it's still going to knock your socks off.
Well, hey, guys, we are at the Southern California Gang Conference. A lot of people out here. And as we did last time, we did some follow-ups. So we got a follow-up with the person who kicked off the conference this morning with the keynote, crushed it, changed a lot of people's mind, and sold a lot of books.
That's right.
John Mattingly. He was our first episode this year, brother, so welcome back.
Thanks, man. Glad to be here.
Hey, this is, I tell you what, and it's exciting that we finally got to meet you in person. You guys yanked my freaking chain yesterday walking up to introduce Alfred or Albert.
Albert,
or whatever.
I introduced him as Albert, and he wanted to get a picture of him sitting on your lap.
Yes. He almost obliged. He sat down real quick.
Well, after he found out who you were, he really wanted you to sit on his lap, so...
No, it's truly, and I'm not blowing smoke here, brother. It's an honor to meet you in person.
Well, same here, man.
The crap you went through, I mean, I say this over and over, I don't have heroes, but I have people I respect, and you're right at the top of the list, man.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. It means a lot.
Yeah. So, and then one of the key things here was your keynote speech. So as we did last time, what we want to do is we want to follow up and see how's it going. But first of all, let's talk about one of the things you've done since you got out of policing. You know, you stayed under the radar for a while, but then you started doing a lot of talks and you've been going to a lot of conventions. So let's talk about what's happened since then. So you got your book out. And you started speaking. Where did you start speaking at, and who have you been speaking to?
Well, man, it's mostly narcotics conferences. I started down in Alabama and then Tennessee. And Tennessee is kind of what really got me the start. Gene Donegan down there. A buddy from Kentucky knows him, and they had somebody get COVID at the last second. And he was like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do. He said, I got the perfect guy for you. And so I kind of got my feet wet there, and it was just a blessing because from that one conference, things just kind of took off and met the right people. And then, man, I've been able to travel all over the places in the States I would never have, you know, gone if I'd stayed a cop. So it's been kind of a blessing in disguise. Plus, I get to, you know, meet new people like you guys and hang out with cops since I don't have that in my life anymore. It's kind of a void that you have.
It is. You miss
absolutely.
It. Right, yeah.
That's the biggest thing you miss when you retire because I had 38 years of camaraderie in the law enforcement culture, and then all of a sudden you retired and...
It's gone.
If you haven't been part of the law enforcement culture, you may not understand just how tight everybody is.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're out there by yourself.
Well, after it's kind of your last day, then it's like you come back and they go, Morgan who? Steve who?
Yeah. Can I have your chair when you leave?
I had always heard, they'd always said, a month after you retire, people are going to forget your name.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, because of my situation, they won't forget my name, but they forget to call you.
Yeah.
So you get left out of the invites and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's talk, because your presentation today was just, it was amazing. I watched a lot of it. You didn't see me. I was actually backstage watching you through the curtains.
Okay.
And then I was watching the audience and stuff. And it's like, you got a good set of laughs. I mean, there was some humor in it. But, I mean, you, part of the story you told is really a paradigm shift for a lot of people. There are cops out here who kind of know the story, but even they didn't know the whole story. How many people did you have come up to you at your book table and go, man, I didn't, you know, it's like they didn't even know this.
It was at least a couple dozen. The very last lady that just came up to me, we were talking for a minute, and she interjected when I was talking to another guy. She said, this whole time, I thought you had the wrong apartment. I thought y'all went to the wrong place. It was today that I learned you didn't.
You're kidding.
Yeah. No, and there's several people out there that thought that. I mean, it's bizarre how somebody with influence like a Kamala Harris or LeBron James, who have millions of followers, can say one thing and it just sticks.
Because they didn't get the facts. Steve and I talk about this all the time. Do your own research. But somebody say, my response to somebody one time when they were talking about this case, they said, well, he hit the wrong apartment. I said, how do you know? What's your research? Where did you come up with? Where did
Ben
you come
Crump
up with that?
Told me.
Yeah.
Right. Now that I came walking through today too when you'd put up the video of Kamala Harris. So I was walking through today when you were showing the video from Kamala Harris, and I'm, you know, I mean, our listeners, you know, we try to stay as apolitical as we can here. But when you got the Vice President of the United States coming out and making these false claims because they simply haven't, and not just her, it could be any politician, just because they haven't researched the facts, taken the time to learn what the real truth is, that is, in my book, that's completely unacceptable. That's the highest, second highest political office in our country. And she's sitting there sprouting out lies simply because either she didn't do the research or her advisors, her mentors around her are giving her bad information.
Well, Steve, I hate to go to her defense, but in her defense, she was only a senator at that point.
Was she?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point when she did it, now in the presidential debates, both Harris and Biden on national TV condemned it and talked about it and said wrong things.
So,
but at that point, she was a senator. That's when she got the 48 or 58 or whatever it was, senators and congressmen to write that letter
You're right.
Condemning us and saying we should go to prison, lose our pension, all that stuff.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and the problem is there's no recourse on them. Right. There's none. They have
the only thing you can do is wait till the next election cycle and vote them out, but that doesn't happen with a lot of these incumbents.
Right.
Well, because people have short memories. It's a new thing tomorrow and a new thing the next day. They just destroy life and move on, and then destroy somebody else and move on. And by the time that 2 years or 4 years is up, people have forgotten about. I mean, we've got such short memories in this country. It's unbelievable.
Yep, it's unacceptable.
Well, let's talk a little bit, too, about how it's been going then with the speaking thing. So you started talking to law enforcement. Have you talked to some community groups or the public?
Well, it's funny you say that. So I talked to a group in Kentucky, the Southern Kentucky Republican Women's Convention, and it got out. And we had protests, and the venue we were supposed to have it at, which was a private, closed event at a country club, they got harassed so much that they backed out 2 hours before, 3 hours before. and one of the guys that was running for governor of Kentucky knew I was going to be there, asked if he could come. When things got hot in the media, he pulled out. And from what I was told from inside people, it was actually the guy who advised him to pull out of it is the one whose wife goes to that country club, and he reached out to the country club and said, hey, shouldn't have him. And so they canceled that also. And so we ended up at this, I feel so bad for this restaurant. It's called Anna's Greek Restaurant. And the person, one of the ladies lives in their neighborhood and knows them. And she was like, hey, can we rent an upstairs out? There's going to be like 85 or 100 people, whatever it was. He's a businessman. He didn't even ask why. Mm-hmm. Sure, you can rent it out. Did it. Well, the upstairs wasn't totally enclosed. It was kind of like a balcony type thing. So some of the people downstairs could hear. But what I think happened is a couple of the protesters got reservations and came in and then threw a fit and were yelling downstairs, say her name, you know, all this stuff, murder, all the typical stuff. And then it hit the news and then social media, and he got dogged on there, the owner did. And, you know, they're calling him all kinds of names. And he's an immigrant. He's not even from America. He came here and he started from nothing and built this thing all the way up and is, you know, has employees and a reputable business, and they're trying to tear it down. And I was like, so I got on and made a statement saying, hey, this guy knew nothing. He didn't support me. He didn't know me. I don't know him. He's a businessman doing business, and, you know, you are condemning him for it. So there's been that type of thing. So I was kind of like, I probably won't speak in Kentucky again because it's still too hot right now.
Unbelievable. And what year did she pass away?
2020.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And people are still not interested in not the people that are giving you the problems. They're still not interested in the truth.
Yeah, I told one of the females down there that was yelling, and I said, look, you're welcome to come up and hear the truth if you like. Well, she just kept overriding what I was saying, yelling, and they walked out eventually. But yeah, it was fiasco. And
not before they ruined everybody else's meal. You know, that's the other thing too, is that nobody wants to have a respectful but candid debate. Yeah. I mean, I was telling some other folks, I got a friend of mine that we're polar opposites politically, but we've remained friends for years. We played in a band together. We go out and do stuff together because it's respectful. I respect his point of view. He respects mine. We can have good, vigorous discussions without ever getting personal about it. I think we've just lost. Nobody wants to hear the facts anymore. What they get is a narrative. But let me tell you, I was telling somebody this too, and I learned this from a guy I listened to on the radio a lot out in my area, a guy named Chris Plant. But he's a funny guy. But he says the media has the most insidious power there is, and it's the power to ignore. And they ignore the truth. They ignore because it doesn't frame and fit the narrative. And so they can ignore.
Yeah. So there's been, when I put the book out, you know, the publisher reached out to media, both left and right, and nobody wanted to talk. You know, you had somebody like OAN had me on once. I've been on, what's the other channel? Newsmax a few times. They've been cordial. But like Fox wouldn't touch it. CNN, MSNBC, none of them wanted the truth. You're like, well, here, take the book, read it. And if you have any questions about it, if you want to debate me or question whether I'm lying or not, do it. I don't care. I've got the truth. It's not going to change. Mm-hmm. So this is the answer. It's going to be the answer when you ask me 10 different ways, just like attorneys do. And this is it. And none of them would have it.
I have somebody I'm going to introduce you to. I don't know if you know who David Webb is.
No.
David Webb's got a big following on SiriusXM. He's done stuff on Fox and the other stuff. He's a good conservative patriot. I'll tell you a funny story about David real quick. You see where I'm going with this. So David got invited to be on CNN one time, and it was but they were doing it. They had to do a phoner, so he's phoning in, and the host, I don't remember what her name was. She was a black lady, but she started talking to him, and then she started lecturing him on his white privilege. And David says, he goes, "Well, apparently your staff didn't do their homework for you." He says, "I'm black."
Oh, oops.
David and I have been buddies for a long time. I've helped him out with stuff. I've been on a show. So I'll tell you what I'll do is actually when we get done here, I'll make an intro.
All right.
As we're sitting here right now, I'll introduce you to David. David loves this guy. David's a patriot, man, true American, but he calls it like he sees it, which is what and he would eat this up because I think he loves destroying the narrative and getting to the facts, getting to the truth. So we'll do that for you too. So any more community groups?
Not really community. You know, okay. I've done an FOP group, HIDA groups, but it's mainly just police officers. I don't know if the general public's just not quite. I think most people are scared of the controversy after stuff what happens, yeah, like in at Anna's Greek Restaurant happened, because they're like, we don't want our organization, our life destroyed over something that we really don't have a vested
interest in. Yeah, but isn't it amazing that it only takes, it's the vocal minority.
Yeah.
Right. The problem is the silent majority is remaining silent. That's the problem. When I watch the people in the audience today here, when you're talking, I mean, there are people there who's had, like you said, complete paradigm shift. You didn't hit the wrong door. When you learn about her and her background and the money she was holding for the other people, you learned about, you know what? It's that whole interview with, I don't even want to give him airtime, the dude, the one that fired the shots, mm-hmm, the one that was so heroic, he waited 17 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that interview, he acknowledges that he knew it was the police out there. This is he's in police station being interviewed by a police detective, knows it's being recorded, and he says on there he knew it was the police out there, and yet what's the narrative that got out there?
He didn't know. We did not going to announce that he thought he was getting broken into or getting robbed, or, you know, it's just,
see,
it changed like
that,
9 times, number one.
And why that video is not being played every time somebody said, let me play you the video from the guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He says...
And what we call that lying. That's exactly what he did. All you got to do is tell the truth. That's what John did, and yet nobody wants to hear the truth.
No.
Well, it's not sensational enough. It doesn't cause the drama that people need for that little endorphin hit they get in the back of their head.
Yep. It would put everything to rest. It would calm down your life considerably.
Well, I mean, it's been proven that anything that's very antagonistic or very, you know, causes drama, people want. You know, it's not what we need.
Conflict sells.
That's what she is. Hollywood.
When's the last time you wanted to watch a movie to where nothing happened in it?
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, we talk about Narcos, Steve.
Yeah.
There wasn't this conflict between you and JP, but they had to create conflict because that conflict drives the story forward.
That was the biggest thing I learned in dealing with the Narcos and Netflix and the whole series was conflict is included in everything. They show Javier and I yelling at each other and shoving each other and getting ready to go in a fist fight. We've never even had a disagreement. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But you're right. That's what sells.
All right. Well, let's talk about some of the groups you've talked to. Now that your book is out and you've got folks, I mean, you sold a lot of books out here today, too. I mean, there's a lot of people. I had to go track your ass down, by the way. I was guarding your table. I came in. I don't know if you saw this, Murph. I came into the auditorium and he's kind of lollygagging. I said, dude, you got a freaking line out there.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, my God. Then he starts, you know,
walking faster. Being the friend that I am, you know, I was sharing a table with him. I'm like, hey, folks, we got manhunters over here. Come on over. We'll be back later. Don't worry. No, I wouldn't do that to you, man.
No, I wouldn't care.
That's the way you gauge too, is you look at the lines that show up, the people that want to get the book. And I mean, you basically, I don't know how many books have you got left now?
I think I sold right at 50. So far.
But I mean, but you got a lot, yeah. I mean, a lot are gone. And, but that was the thing. So, but when you've talked to these groups, give me your takeaways. When you get done talking and they hear the real story, what are like two to three takeaways they take away, from it, but that changes their mind about stuff. And then I want you to address, too, it was the big important lesson you talked about at the end. We have plans for all of this stuff, but what's my personal plan for when I'm involved in something big?
So the takeaways that people get, first off, I've got a lot of them come up to me ticked off, and they're like, screw this job, I don't want it. And I'm always like, no.
We need you.
That was not the purpose of this. We need guys like you who are willing to risk everything for the rest of us. I'm not there anymore.
Right.
I want you.
Right.
And so that's the takeaway. The other one is just they're baffled by the lies. they're baffled that they bought into it. Being a cop, seeing what they see on the daily, as far as they watch the news. I remember, you know, just being a beat cop, making a scene and doing something, then seeing on the news the next day going, that's not how it happened. Mm-hmm. But it didn't affect me, so I didn't care. I just went on with my life.
Yeah.
But then once you're actually affected by something, it just hits you a little different. And it even bothers me more now when I see stuff like the Kyle Rittenhouse stuff. I get so mad now because I'm like, I get it. I've been there. I know he's getting drugged for no reason.
But you know the biggest takeaway from that trial was? I'd hate to interrupt there. You know, did you see what his defense attorney did when they brought up the one guy that was supposed to be the, quote, victim? And they've got the video, and he admits, yeah, I had a rifle pointed in his face.
Right.
How many people heard that before the trial?
Oh, none, probably.
And that video was out there for how long the incident?
It's still, because, you know, I follow him online. He follows me. And he still gets people say that stupid kind of stuff. You know, this guy came on purpose, crossed state lines to kill people. And I'm like, no, the pedophiles kind of attacked him. You know, they hit him in the head with a skateboard. They pulled a gun and pointed at his face. Why does he not have the right to protect himself? Like, mm-hmm. How can Kenneth Walker be a hero for shooting a cop for, quote, protecting his house? But this kid's a demon for protecting his life. Right. Makes no sense.
Right. It's got to fit whatever their agenda is.
Right.
It, you know, and for our listeners, I mean, you've heard Morgan and I say this 100 times now. Don't accept what politicians or the media feeds us. You all have a brain. We all have a brain. We are all intelligent to a certain degree. Do your research, and then you make up your own mind.
Well, if I like the way you couch that, we're all intelligent to a certain degree. Okay, well, who are you referring to exactly?
Well, I was looking at you, but I didn't want to say your name. But, I mean, even so, you were with me yesterday. I did 2 presentations yesterday on the Escobar story here at the Southern California Gang Conference. And both times at the end, and it's pretty much the same presentation 8 years now. You know, Pablo dies in the end. But at the end, before I tell them what the result was of the death, how the death rate in Medellin reduced by almost 80%, I challenge the audience, don't accept what I'm telling you as the gospel.
Right.
Go, I'm going to tell you, and then I want you to go do your own research, and then you decide if I'm telling you is true.
And your great story about that, you were on Tom Segura, had you on his podcast, and he had all of these preconceived notions. Tom Segura, he's got one of the top podcasts on the interwebs, you know.
Yeah.
And when you got done, what was his takeaway?
He said, I've got to tell you, you have just changed my mind 180 degrees. And Tom, I mean, he's all over the world right now. I follow him on social media. He's doing this worldwide tour. I think the name of his tour is I'm Going Everywhere. You know, and I mean, so this is a big dude that is used to challenging people. And by the time we finished, and it wasn't confrontational, it was very cordial.
Totally diffused him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was a nice guy on top of that, you know, but he's not somebody you would bowl over. But once he heard the facts, completely different opinion.
Right. Well, and that's most people, even civilians that I've talked to, because I'm willing to talk to anybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I was at Illinois at a conference, and a lady in a Illinois state, I don't know what they called it. It's their integrity unit. So it's kind of like their IA, state police. She came up to me after I was signing books. She came up to the table, and I thought she was going to get a book. She said, no, I don't want a book. And she pulled her phone out. She's looking at it. I've just got some questions for you. She started interrogating me right there.
Wow.
Well, I'm signing books. I'm like, she's like, do you mind answering? I went, ask me anything you want. I said, I'll answer any question you got. And so I answered all her questions. The sad part was probably 5 of the 6 questions I answered in the presentation if she had listened.
It's like, where have you been for the last 2 hours?
I wanted to say that, but I was trying so hard to be nice. I was like, did you have your ears plugged? I mean, everything you wrote down that you thought of during this presentation, you must have been busy typing while I was telling the answer. And so,
Unbelievable. And
it didn't even bother me, really, but I'm just like, number one, why are you coming at me as an investigator at a conference? Mm-hmm. You know, that irritated me because nobody likes investigators, right?
Nobody likes that.
And so, but I'm like, that's fine. I'll answer your questions. And she thanked me afterwards, and she was kind when she was done. But I'm like, it's kind of useless.
Did you
I should just hand her a book and said, here, you don't even got to buy it. I'll just give it to you. All the answers are in there.
Wow. Is that all I got to do?
That's it.
Oh, you don't know what you're in for, John.
Get your hand off my thigh.
Oh, okay. Whoa, don't let the good looks fool you.
This went all downhill right.
It was the music. It was the singing last night.
I know. Yes, yeah.
Very talented.
I was there, yes. And you were a big hit with all the women over 70. That's all I can say.
The hips were they're swaying.
Well, no, you got to be careful with the hips. I mean, their hips, not yours. Yes.
And you wonder why I left early?
You left because you said it was loud and it was time for your Metamucil.
There was almost my bedtime. We're on West Coast time.
Man. Oh, that's right, man. It's that 3-hour time zone. Guys were asking me, are you hungry? I said, no, dude, it's like 4:30 in the afternoon where I'm at right now. I'm not ready to eat. It's like, but let's talk, though, about you've been speaking at a lot of these conferences now. So how long have you been doing your speaking gig now? How long has that been going on?
I'm in the, probably about 2 years.
Okay.
I would have to look to see when Tennessee's was, but I think it's right at 2 years.
Okay. And how many total people do you think you probably, is like 900.
Right. Mm-hmm. Man, I haven't even thought about that. So you're looking, probably the average is about, because you got some at 300 and some at 600, and INA was like 750 or something. So you're looking at maybe average of 400 times 24 mm-hmm. conferences. So quite a few.
Okay, well, apparently math isn't your strong suit.
I don't know. 8,000.
No, that's what I was thinking, 8,000 to 10,000 people. I mean, that you've got, and that's the hard part. You're out there doing hand-to-hand combat to get your story out, but yet the people, all they got to do is go to some attorney who goes out and makes these salacious accusations, and you got to spend, I mean, I hate to say it, but you got to spend the rest of your life defending this.
Yeah, I spent 2 years talking to 8,000 people, convincing them. They get online with one tweet and convince 2 million.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're like, I'll never win this battle.
Right.
It's straight uphill.
Unbelievable.
Like Cardi B's, you know, her one tweet had over 17 million views, the video of what that was full of lies. And so I can't influence 17 million people, not in my entire lifetime. No. So it's an unfair battle, but it's what it is. I mean,
it's showed like, some of the videos of the people, they just kept protesting. There's a First Amendment right to peacefully protest. Correct. And everybody tried to say, well, it was a mostly peaceful protest. No, not the one that you showed that I remember where the guy starts just walking across, running across and starts shooting. Cops got shot. Mm-hmm. Innocent people get shot. I mean, how can anybody say that this is okay?
Right. It's unreal. The twisted mindset of the end justifies the means is, as police officers, we can't use that excuse.
Right.
You know, I can't circumvent the Fourth Amendment to get what I know is inside that house because I don't have enough PC.
Well, I solved the case. I illegally searched. I detained him, beat a confession out of him, but hey, we solved the case.
That's right. If that's all it takes, I mean, what's good for the goose, right?
Well, that's the thing. People don't want that. If the law enforcement were allowed to act the way that a lot of these other people are, they would revolt.
Right.
But where's the revolution on the other side?
I'm still waiting for it.
Well, we all took an oath to defend and protect the Constitution of the United States.
Right.
And that means we go by the rules. That's what separates us from, you know, shitbirds out there.
Animals.
Just be honorable, you know, be honest about it. It's the thin blue line is a true thing. And it's even when I'm doing my presentation, I talk about when my partner Kevin was shot and I went out and I could have shot the guy in the back of the head and wanted to.
You would have gotten an award because of probably the situation.
Yeah. But when I looked at him, he had dropped his gun. And that's what separates the good guys from the bad guys, that thin blue line. We do not. There are occasionally a bad cop that does step across that line. But as our regular listeners know, our saying is nobody hates a bad cop more than a good cop.
Yeah.
We don't make excuses. The guy we met here last year is a perfect example. Oh. You remember, and we're not going to mention his name.
He was a douche nugget. He comes up to us and he's like, I'm podcast gold. He was a crooked cop that went to prison for helping a gang deal dope up there.
Yeah.
And then he comes out and he's like, he's just all cavalier about it. And it's like, we went out to eat the pizza and, you know, it's like, I tell you how juvenile I was getting. I was like, he had to go get a plane in a while. I was going to go hide his bag.
Because he damaged our careers.
Yes. Yeah.
He put such a stain on us with that that we'll never get it back, but now he's profiting off of it.
Exactly.
And it's, where's the justice in that? People always cry, justice for X. Well, where's the justice?
You saw this morning how we're all back there in the green room together getting ready for the conference to start during the daytime, and it'll be the same tomorrow. And he came in, and once we all knew who he was, he's a man on the island by himself.
Good buddy of mine, we actually interviewed Tommy Joyce and Mike Prate, but Tommy Joyce from NYPD, so this guy was I texted him and he came back with a term I don't want to use, but it was like, and he saw that and he's like, oh, is that what, he was like, funny, is that what they say about me? So I'm talking about something else, but I was showing him the text, but I wanted him to know, the connections are far and deep, so we checked him out, and it's like, oh yeah, that his name is despised to this day, still up at NYPD.
I mean,
No, it should be good. He should. It should be like Voldemort, you know, the name that has never spoken.
The again, Scarlet Letter.
Well, and the other thing is, and I've kind of coined this phrase now that I'm an old fart, you know, has been, just because we retired doesn't mean our oaths ever expired.
That's true.
You take an oath, you take an oath for life.
Well, think about our non-disclosures, like on security clearances. Mm-hmm. Non-disclosures don't expire. We don't. There's not like, oh, 10 years from now, you can tell all the secrets, you know, right?
No, that's some of them. You can't even talk about the operational names. You go to jail for that.
Yeah. Like what? Give us an example.
Mr. Adam Schiff.
Well, like, I'm old enough that I keep forgetting that stuff. One of these days, I'm going to find that drug that helps you with your memory. I just can't remember the name of it.
Just write it down.
I just take it. I got it.
Yeah. That's what would happen.
Well, hey, so, but you've been doing, so what's next for you? Has there been any interest at all from, because, you know, we were joking about this, said we've helped launch a couple careers, but like we were talking to Lou Velozzi, we're going to try and catch up with him, but he had to take off. But since then, I mean, we got him on the podcast. That was his first kind of break. Some folks heard about it. They picked up his book, and now he's going to do a thing for Discovery. Has there been any interest from anybody, Hollywood producers, anybody in the story?
No.
I can't imagine Hollywood. There might be one producer.
Maybe
right
a
there.
Mel Gibson type, because he don't mind being a little, you know, little risky with religion.
Well, have you
and
seen
stuff
Lethal Weapon? Yeah, of course he's nuts.
Yeah, it's
no. There's been none. Again, I can't even get the conservatives to talk to me. How's Hollywood going to talk to me?
Jeez,
man, I don't know.
It just makes you question everything about our country. The truth doesn't matter anymore.
Right.
People just, you know, Morgan's heard me bitch about this all the time, that we've just become so permissive in our country that anything goes. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. You know, we're based on the rule of law.
Anything negative goes or anything ugly goes.
But there's supposed to be consequences. But there's this thing is there's no consequence anymore. I was talking to a guy from L.A. Sheriff here, and they're talking about, he knew Claudia. And, you know, she and her partner had already been removed from the scene, but he responded to help secure the scene and do stuff. But he was talking about they're dealing with 13, 14, 15 year olds. And in my day, when I was 13 year old, and if a cop told me jump, I'd say, how, you know, whatever. You know, it was just the respect. But now it's like they're in their face, they're threatening them. You know, they get them with a gun, they take them to jail, their parents come pick them up, and they're back out on the street again doing the same thing.
This is how bad the juvenile thing is. So, a buddy of mine is still a sergeant on late watch in a urban area that's crime ridden.
Mm-hmm.
They had these two juveniles shoot two other people one night. They get them. They get the guns. They bring them in. And they've taken away in Jefferson County, which is a million people, the largest city in the state of Kentucky. They moved the juvenile detention center out of that in about 2.5 hours away. Yes.
Wow.
So majority of the time, either cops won't mess with juveniles, which is understandable, or if they get them, they've got to let them go or sign them off to mom. They call it, and they've got to go through a process if they actually want to physically lock them up. They've got to call I don't even know what it's called because they didn't have it when I was there, some kind of justice reform for juveniles or something, and they've got to approve it. They wanted them to release them to their parents for shooting people. And luckily my friend was like, no, this ain't happening. And he made some calls over their head and finally got it approved. Now they had to haul them 2.5 hours away, but at least you've got these crazy juveniles off the street that are willing to kill at the drop of a hat. And speaking of that, I think it was about 2014-15 when that whole shift happened.
Yeah.
And it was during the Obama era. It was when all of a sudden he had so much disrespect for police and talking about, you know.
You know where that happened at? And he had to eat his words. It's when they had that incident at the Cambridge. And he said the Cambridge police acted stupidly before he had the facts. And then come to find out, the guy that he was talking about not only taught their version of, you know, conflict management and de-escalation and stuff. And guy was he was well respected. That's when they ended up having the infamous beer summit.
Would you have gone to have a beer? I think I would have turned him down.
No.
Yeah, you're right.
You know what I would have done?
I think that would have made a bigger statement. I think it would have.
I didn't see that video until you played it again this morning, or until you played it this morning, which is when the mayor showed up, when you guys were having all the unrest and the civil unrest, and you're staging at a National Guard armory, and he walks in, and everybody gets up and kind of says,
screw you.
Heck with this. And walked out. Yeah.
Yeah. And we need more of that.
I'd say I had a snicker when I saw that.
I was jumping up and down.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, baby. Yeah. But folks are going to think that we're being... No, it's like, you know what? When you sign up to do this job and you put on the badge and the gun and realize, hey, it's like you. I mean, to this day, you still walk around with the, you're the only, other than Brianna, right? But from the law enforcement side, you're the only person that got shot.
Right.
You know, you're the person, you've got, mm-hmm. you've got a permanent, I was going to say visible, but you got pants on. I don't want to see.
Every time I change, I see it. Yes, yeah, I'm reminded every
but
time.
But that's what I'm saying. But every time you're there, you're reminded of it. That's something you got to live with through the rest of your life. But again, where's the justice for you? We talked about how you got treated by the city. And you're right. The city attorneys are not there for you. They're there for the city.
Right.
You know? And where's your justice? I mean, I don't
know. I lost money.
Yeah.
I mean, I got my butt kicked in this thing.
Yeah.
And you would think that at least break even. You
right,
know, but
right.
when you lose your overtime and you're off duty and you're getting your base pay for, you know, 2 years, then you go into retirement from that, and that affects
and your retirement's calculated mm-hmm. on
yeah.
your.
And so everything was just, you know, it just changed.
Yeah.
And again, there's been good out of it. I'm not gonna sit here and complain about all of it, because there's been some good stuff come out of it, but it's not right. I don't want somebody else to have to go through it.
Yeah. And I know folks are probably going to hear some background noise and stuff here. We're at an active conference and people are moving stuff around. So
yeah, we usually don't do this. This is, and I mean, quite honestly, this is very special for us.
Yeah,
I love coming out.
I know it's more personal too, because you know, Mr. Mattingly here was laying on the couch. He wanted us to put the mic so he could be stretched out on the couch with his head on the pillow.
I'm bougie.
You got some learning here. Yeah.
All right, so what's next for you,
man? Yeah, I'll be honest. It's kind of wide open. I'm not sure. And me and my wife talk all the time. And I'm always in that state of thinking, what is next? And I don't want to force anything. I kind of want it to be organic. And that sounds kind of hippie-ish. But
no.
I kind of want the right thing to come. I don't want to push something and then regret it, or, you know, have to do a 180 and change my mind. So I'm not real sure. I'm just doing this and trusting that God's going to open the right door. And when he does, hopefully I'm smart enough to walk through it.
That's it. If it was being smart with the good Lord, I'm not sure I'd still be here. But when he presents an opportunity, I always step through. And if it doesn't work out, then I just feel like, you know, he's got something else to plan.
He's maybe checking your faith.
Exactly. Well, that's like the guy, big flood comes into his town and he's up on his roof and he's standing there and people say, guy, you know, little raft comes by. He says, hop in. He says, no, the Lord will save me. Guy in a little motorboat comes by, says, hop in, we'll save me. No, the Lord will save me. Guy, you know, Coast Guard cutter comes by, hey, no, Lord will save me. Well, he drowns, he goes to heaven, right? And he's standing at the pearly gates, he's talking to St. Peter. He says, St. Peter said, why didn't the Lord save me? Dude, we sent you a raft, a boat, and a Coast Guard cutter.
Yeah.
You know?
All you do is follow.
Sometimes it's right there in front of you. You just don't know it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it encourages me to hear you say that, because if you just got to be ready, though. Because if you say, show me an open door, I'll step through. Step through, man.
Right. Yeah. And the fortunate thing is, like I said, my dad is still a preacher. You know, he's almost 80. And we were taught, it was instilled in us that money doesn't drive you. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, it's fun. It can get you cool things, but it's a tool, is what he always said. It's a tool. And if you take it for yourself, you're kind of shortchanging what God gave you. Help other people with
right.
it. So greed's never been an issue with me, thank God, because I've seen it with guys and it kind of ruins them and people don't like them and all that. But it's just not my driving force. Money isn't. So as long as I've got my health and my family and all that, I'm good.
Well, seeing people get the biblical saying wrong, they go, money is the root of all evil.
No, the love of money
is the root of all evil.
There you go.
But I'm surprised you knew that.
Tour. Good job, man.
You'd be surprised the stuff. But I do love my Tommy once. Bahama. See, you guys are jealous because I got my Tommy Bahama.
Well.
Yeah, you see this, right?
It looks good.
It is, man.
It's got your number on it.
It's got. I told you, that's my personnel number.
Don't encourage him.
Artist Series 2020. All right.
You know, you can get free t-shirts here, and there you are wearing Tommy Bahama.
There's a reason why.
Because he doesn't look like everybody else.
That's right.
I tell you what, they offered me free t-shirts this morning, and I turned them down.
Did you?
I've got so many.
Yeah. It's like going to a conference. Here's another bag. I don't need another bag. I don't need this.
I got a lot of tumblers.
Yeah.
A whole lot of tumblers.
Oh,
gosh. It's okay.
It's all good stuff.
We appreciate it.
Right. Well, hey, look, we just wanted to do a quick catch-up, which is what we did last time. You know, just basically 30 minutes or so of just catching up. And but remember, tell us the name of the book again, because they can go to our website and find it.
It's 12 Seconds in the Dark, and Amazon's the best place to get it right now. It's on sale. And I think... if you got it and read it, it would open your mind to some things and see some things. Now, things have happened since then, but that's the crux of it. And if you want to give it to somebody else, do it. Pass it along, man. Be a library just so people get the truth out. Because, again, it's not about me, and I don't make you make y'all know very well, you make pennies on these books. You're not getting rich unless you're a big famous person. But the whole point of it is to get the truth out, and I just want that to get permeated out so people realize that we can't trust the government. We can't trust the media.
Right.
You've got to, like you said, get the facts out and then let people decide for themselves.
And to our listeners, I've read his book. I read his book before we did the podcast interview with you. It's one of the most eye-opening books I've ever read. It just reinforces what we tell our listeners. Don't let other people tell you what to
think. Let the cake bake, man.
Own research and make up your own mind. And you know what, John, for you and your family, because I know your family sacrificed as much, if not more than you, maybe not physically, 100%. But certainly emotionally. God bless you all, man. We're just proud of you. Thank you for coming out here to the Southern California Game Conference, and we will continue to promote you as much as we possibly can. Just stand by.
Appreciate you guys.
Now get off your ass and go sell some more books.
Let's do it.
All right, let's go. Man. All right, see you. Bye.
Hey, players, that is the end of part one. Part two comes out, as always, on Tuesday. In the meantime, go check us out at Game of Crimes on Twitter, at Game of Crimes Podcast on Facebook and the Instagram. Also, go check out our website, gameofcrimespodcast.com. We've got a lot more information there, including our book list. Any book written by our guests will be listed there. In the meantime, go check us out also, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. It's where we put a lot more content you won't hear on our regular podcast. We go into a lot more topics, and folks, it is a lot of fun. So go check us out, patreon.com/gameofcrimes. In the meantime, everybody stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow for part two.